This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Gas House Gang every weekday from 12 until 1 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX. It is Chris Ranji with Kevin Wheeler, Mike Claiborne. That is the show today with you on this Friday. World Series Game 6 is tonight between the Blue Jays and the Dodgers. Toronto has a 3-2 lead in this series. They will be playing up in Canada tonight. And Bernie and I and Tom Ackerman were talking about this series on, well, really all week. But after that 18-inning game in which the Dodgers won it, we kind of figured, you know, this is probably about it, that L.A. might, after a backbreaker like that, might go ahead and walk away with the rest of the series. And that is not what happened at all. In fact, Toronto has a chance to close things out tonight. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Cardinals and their coaching staff, which is, according to reporting from the last 24 hours or so, going to remain about the same. Nobody's going to be let go. So the staff is returning, though there are going to be some title changes and some additions to the coaching staff and to the support staff as well. We will discuss all of that. We've got SEC and Mizzou football. We'll talk about that with Connor O'Gara today. That's coming up on the Gas House Gang. But first things first, let's talk about this series, which tonight is Game 6, Mike Claiborne. And, you know, looks like Bernie and I are wrong about what happened on during the week, because the Dodgers, even though they've got that pretty big payroll, Toronto right there, big payroll as well. And it looks like they could close, or they could certainly close the series out tonight, and maybe they will end up doing that. What do you think about the series so far?
Well, they're certainly in good position for it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. As my mic is muted, let's do that.
We got
how
you.
About that?
Yeah, we got
now?
You. Yeah.
All right. They're in good position to do it, obviously. Their bullpen is set up for things. Their offense is playing well. But, you know, when you look at the Dodgers, they were kind of beatable. You know, they had pitching to kind of save their bacon. The bottom of their order hasn't been effective. Mookie Betts has been struggling. And, you know, it just isn't the team you thought it was going to be. But Toronto, man, has battled, man. And, you know, you keep hearing the term, they're really fighters, and they've really shown that. And they just kind of moved on from the 18-inning game. Most teams would have just packed it up, but they felt like, you know what, we need to do some business in L.A. We got 2 games in our own backyard, and we'll see what happens.
It's been interesting to watch the Dodgers lineup struggle so badly. Otani has these 2 legendary games, right? Mm-hmm. He had game 5 in the last series with 3 home runs and all of that, and then he had 2 home runs the other night. That, you know, on base 9 times in the 18-inning game. If you take those 2 games out in the last 2 series, he's hitting .150.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been 15 games, I believe, in these playoffs, if I'm doing it right. And in like 13 of them, he's been, you know, I think he has like 20 strikeouts in 13 games or 18. It's really been un-Otani-like except for 2 games. And then you take Mookie Betts, who's not doing his thing. Freddie Freeman's got the big walk-off hit, but he's nowhere near Freddie Freeman. Tommy Edman's been Kike Hernandez has been okay. Pajes, oof. Andy Pajes had a big year, didn't he? 26, yeah. 27 homers. He's done nothing. He's 0-80 in the playoffs. 0-80 in the playoffs with no power.
You know what I think it comes down to is when you think about Pajes and guys at the bottom of the order not getting on base in front of Otani.
Agreed, yeah.
You know, I just think you pitch around Otani.
Will do, yeah.
There's nothing, no damage. And you know what? You take your chances with Mookie. Freddie can obviously hurt you. Teoscar Hernandez is a guy that, you know, they're looking for something from. But I just think, when you look at that Cardinal lineup, we always talk about the bottom of the order, how you have to get something out of it just to get it back to the top. But I think this is a classic example. I think with Otani not having anybody on in front of him, he's not seeing a lot of pitches that are strikes. So a lot of times maybe he's chasing pitches more than going after pitches that are meatballs.
Well, how about that game, the extra inning game? What did they put him on base 3 times in a row?
There were 4 intentional walks and 5
three
walks
in a row,
total,
right?
I think. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't throw him anything. In any meaningful situation, right? First inning, okay, I'm going to pitch to you. But in any meaningful situation, I'm not pitching to him because nobody else is doing anything. And you're right, Claves, it's because nobody's on base in front of him. So what do you do? Do you just keep doing the same thing over and over again? Or do you slide him down into the 3 spot? Or even just the 2 spot? But even then, who do you put in front of him?
Who's going to exactly. Mookie, nobody else is getting on base. You're right.
Right. Like, yeah. Betts would be the guy, but he's not doing anything. So I think what's interesting about this, first of all, I think it's good for baseball if the Dodgers lose this series. Even though the Blue Jays are a $250 million payroll team, they are more attainable and more doable as a roster than the Dodgers for most teams. You can look at them and go, we can do that. We can get those guys. Their biggest expenditure this offseason was Santander. He hasn't done anything. Mm-hmm. He's not even a part of any of this. Yeah. And I think that when you look at this Dodgers team, what I've been saying for a bit, and I don't think I'm right yet because it's too early, but it's trending this way. These guys on big contracts are going to get old, and they're all getting old at the same time.
Quick.
I mean, this thing with Betts isn't new. He struggled for 5 months this year. He wasn't good at all. And I know he got sick, didn't he, Klaibs, in the Japan series. And I don't know if that, like, just...
He didn't even participate.
Right. He was sick, he didn't even play.
He lost 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And for a guy his size, he can't afford to lose 20 pounds. I had a very good conversation with him when we were playing out there earlier. And he was really struggling.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, I don't know, man. This might be it. And I said, well, you know, you're playing us for three games, and we seem to make you healthy real quick, and he killed us in that series. But, you know, there are some guys that are like that. But you know what, Kevin? I think the other thing that really needs to come into play here is when you look at the Blue Jays, $250 million payroll, but a lot of those guys are homegrown.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
The Dodgers, when you look at that team, who's homegrown? Will Smith?
Yep.
Who else? Pajes is a guy.
Pajes is homegrown. Yeah, in the everyday lineup, that's it, because everybody else is either a trade or a free agent signing. On the pitching side, you've got a few more. I don't know if we count Yamamoto. I mean, he was already an established pro, and he got a $200 million contract, so I'm not counting that. But they have a couple guys on the pitching side that are only guys. But look at their bullpen. It's all free agents. It's all guys they traded for. It's entirely that. And, you know, I think that they're obviously super loaded, and they're really good. But there's a reason they only won 93 games in the regular season, and there's a reason that they're struggling. And again, when you have that many guys making that much money on long-term deals, if any of them start getting old, good luck.
Yeah, and it's also throwing the fact that you don't know what your farm system looks like anymore, because you've acquired some of these players via trade, so that kind of depletes you there. And if you're really good every year, you're not drafting in the first 10 picks. You're on the back end of the draft, and we've seen that firsthand. That back end guy in the first round takes a little bit more time to develop. And for a team who expects to win every year, you've got to find players that are ready to play sooner than some of the kids in the minors.
I got bad news for you. Their system's really good.
No, I'm not saying it's not
good. Here's the thing is, the reason it is because they're amazing in international free agency.
Yep.
They got Cuban guys.
Go.
Yeah, they're really good at that. They're better than everybody else at it, in part because – you know, the prestige of being the Dodgers and being on the West Coast. If you're a Cuban, young Cuban player, if you're a Japanese amateur, like we saw with Roki Sasaki, they all want to be Yankees and Dodgers. They don't want to be Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
Wouldn't either.
and Cincinnati's not going to pay.
Well, they don't want to be Cardinals either, unfortunately.
So, but there was a time when you would have that, and maybe the Cardinals would get back to that. But I think you're spot on about just those organizations with the attraction that they have, and that's all they've heard about wherever they come from.
Think about some of the guys the Dodgers traded away. They traded away Yordan Alvarez when he was like 19 or 20. They traded away O'Neill Cruz. And you're like, you look at the returns that they got on those trades, and you're like, I'm sure they would love a redo. So, yeah, I mean, there's a price at some point, and that price is they just have to pay for everything. And the good part of that is you're getting proven players. The bad part of it is when you're signing people for 8, 9, and 10-year deals, you're basically assuming that the second half of that's not going to be very good.
So, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they're still legit. I mean, they're not going anywhere now. But, man, all of these pitchers who are injury-prone – all of the position players that are, you know, Freddie Freeman's only got 2 more years, but I mean, he's 36.
Yeah.
37. We saw here how fast it can turn. Paul Goldschmidt went from MVP to just a guy in 2 years.
That's right. And let me ask you this, Kevin. You said that you think it'll be better for baseball if the Dodgers don't win this one. I don't think that you were necessarily talking about lockout coming up, depending on
which
we know is very likely going to happen unless something changes.
That's not going to be influenced by one series. Yeah.
No, but because you've still got two top five payroll teams here, but the argument is being made, or it's at least being said, that if the Dodgers win this, that's going to give more fuel to owners to keep pushing for a salary cap. And I don't think it makes much of a difference, effectively, if you've got the first payroll or the fifth payroll in baseball winning. Those are two top five payrolls.
Right, right.
But I think in terms of narrative, it might... It might be that way, but does it? Is it effective? Is the argument more effective if the Dodgers win?
I don't think so. I don't think a series like this, Claves, is going to change an argument that's that big, right?
Yeah, I don't. I agree with you, Kevin. And you know, here's the other thing: what are the players and owners arguing about this time? Now we know that they say never a salary cap. Okay, I get that. Don't necessarily agree with it. But what about a salary floor where we make some of these other teams more accountable in spending money? Let's say your floor is $125 million that you have to spend. So now everything goes up, and as revenues go up, so does the floor. So if you want to be the Dodgers and go out and spend $400 million, so be it. But now that some of these teams will be a little bit more competitive as far as making sure they have some players within their organization. So you don't have the Pittsburghs, you don't have the Tampas, you don't have some of these other teams who just sit on the money and just tell you, hey, look, we're not going to compete. We're just housing a baseball team. That's it.
Yeah, I have two parts for on the whole labor thing. One is I don't care about caps or floors until they do revenue sharing. They have got to fix the incredible difference in revenue. And what they need to do is they won't do it because New York, Boston, LA, those teams, they don't want to give up their advantage.
Obviously.
They don't want to give up their competitive advantage or their financial advantage. And they want to have both things. They want to have a $350 million payroll and $200 million in profits. They want both of those things. But what fixes baseball is if you get something more like an NFL style revenue share where all local revenues go into a pool and you divide equally. Now, I would compromise. I'd be like, all right, we're not going to go all. 70%. You keep 30% of everything local. 70% goes into a pool, and then we divide that by 30, and everybody gets the same out of that. If you want competitiveness, that's where it comes from. The cap and the floor don't change that unless you do that revenue sharing in a way where those teams... Because like if it's a $125 million floor... They're still $220 million off the Dodgers. That's not close. Mm-hmm. That's not competitive.
But here's what I would say to that. I think what it also creates an incentive to be able to do a better job in developing your own players internally. We saw what Tampa was able to do for a number of years. Cleveland was able to do that, develop their homegrown guys. Now, there's going to come a day where they're going to have to say, all right, can we continue to pay this guy? Or is he going to fall into free agency? But if you have a good organization, you're going to say, you know what? We can move this guy and maybe trade and get something better for him because we don't want to pay him. The other thing is when you talk about revenue sharing, I think that baseball needs to figure out what their TV situation looks like.
Yeah. Yes.
Because the reason why the NBA has a $75 billion TV deal and the NFL has an incredible TV deal is because they have their internal act together. I don't think that applies in baseball as we speak. And until you get that straightened out, I think we're just going around in a circle waiting to be able to land the plane.
I'm with you. The thing that kills me about this is the owners try to make this about a cap and about the union. This is an owner versus owner debate. The big boys have to get together with the little guys, and they have to compromise to make the thing more competitive. If they don't do that, nothing else matters. Luxury taxes don't matter. Floors don't matter. Caps don't matter. If the big boys aren't willing to be business partners with the smaller markets, then none of it changes anything. And they're going to try to make it a player's problem, right? The player's this, the player's that. The problem is the big market owners. That's the problem.
So let me run this by you. One vote, one owner, right?
Yeah.
I think there are more guys that are outside that realm of L.A., New York, Boston, and Chicago than there are inside. So that other group of owners, and there's maybe a couple of them that probably shouldn't be in this club in the first place, but there's got to be another group of owners that has to say, you know, we stick together, we can probably force this issue because there are more of those guys who would like the revenue share compared to the New York, Chicago, and Boston, L.A.
That's Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Do want to get to the Cardinals coaching staff. We'll do that a little bit later in the show. But, gentlemen, the Blues, yuck, man. It has not been good. They have dropped six straight games. This is not a great start to the season. We'll try to get into what exactly is going wrong there. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. 104.1 FM KMOX. Kevin Wheeler, Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang until 1 o'clock. SEC, Mizzou football. We'll talk about that just after 12:30 with Connor O'Gara. But, gentlemen, I don't know what's going on with the St. Louis Blues, but they have now dropped six straight games, and the losses have kind of been all over the place. They've been blown out. They've been close. They've gone back and forth in games, ended up losing. They're just not, and you know, they talk about bad puck luck at times, which has happened to them. But whatever it is that's going on with them, they cannot find a way to win, and they've not been able to do it since the 18th of the month. Claiborne, as you see them, what in the world do you think is going on here?
Well, there's a few things. It's not just one issue. not paying attention to detail, not making a commitment going hard to the net, and defensemen having to be able to jump up in the play and making sure the forwards are able to support them. Goaltending has been average, okay? And I think it's only been average because there isn't a lot of help in front. So it's a team effort, and they're just going to have to be a little bit more physical, go to the net harder, as I mentioned, and play good, sound, positional hockey. You have too many guys running around out of position, leaving too many people open. And if you tighten things up and it goes back to paying attention to detail, I think you can be better. I thought last night's effort was better. Not winnable, though. I thought Vancouver took advantage of some things that the Blues just kind of gave them. So they have to find a way to be a little bit more committed. And as we like to say in hockey, you got to go out and play 60 minutes, eh, Kevin?
That's right.
Hey, couple things on this. This is fixable. They're better than they've looked. And I fully expect them to have a hot streak at some point, and it'll balance out. But this is the third straight year, technically really the fourth straight year, that they've started this way. Right? You know, 2022, 2023, they started this way, and they just stayed this way all year long. They were basically a 500 team non-contender. And then, you know, a couple years ago, they had this same start. It got Craig Berube fired. After the firing, they got hot, and they finished well. Last year, wait till your coach gets fired and then finish well. The coach ain't getting fired this time. And This group of players doesn't know what it takes to be a consistent winner. They can go on hot stretches, but they don't get what it takes day in, day out. I mean, look at these scores, man. When they allow fewer than four goals, they're 3-0-2.
I can't remember the last time they did that, though.
No, I mean, like, the last time they allowed fewer than, I'm sorry, they're 3-0-1. The last time they allowed fewer than four goals was October 21st. It was a 2-1 overtime loss against Los Angeles. In their wins, it's 4-2, 5-2, 3-1. The losses are 5-0, 8-3, 2-1, 7-4, 6-4, 6-3, 5-2, 4. This is not about, well, I think this is partly about talent. They don't have enough. They don't.
Really? You don't think so?
They don't. They can't match anyone else's top line. Nobody, all the good teams, they have elite players. This team does not have an elite player.
Especially without
it.
Neighbors.
They don't. He's not elite. He's a good player.
I don't think they're.
They don't have an elite player.
Third line guy. If you have a really good team.
Yeah, and
maybe they're exposed. And maybe there's something to your point, Kevin, where they don't have. And maybe Dvorsky's that guy. You know, I think when you have a good team, Robert Thomas, you think of him, you think of Kyrie, they're good second line forwards.
Yeah.
You don't have enough guys. I don't
or they're
think
the third guy on the top
presence.
Line, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you have enough of a physical presence of that power forward going to the net, drawing penalties, putting himself in a position to get rebounds. You know, I don't know. I don't think you have enough toughness.
No.
Braden Schenn and Tyler Tucker are the only two guys, and Nathan Walker are the only three guys that are willing. Everybody else is looking at the scoreboard or looking at the ice, looking at the tape on their stick. So I just think that from that composition, and I know the game has changed somewhat, but I still think you have to have a heavy team that's going to lean on teams and make you say, gosh, we got to play the St. Louis Blues tonight, and they really play a tough hockey game.
It's tough, man. And I really do think it says a lot about you that you start this way every year. this core starts this way every year. It's four straight years
it's
of starting
trend.
Like this.
Yeah, it's not like a fluke.
They
yeah.
usually figure it out. Now, 3 years ago, they didn't, and they were bad. The last 2 years, they've figured it out and gotten significantly better, but you're digging yourself a six-foot hole, and then you got to try to climb out of it. And, yeah, okay,
let
you can have this
for
great.
A second. Let me ask you this. You just used the word core. Is that the problem?
Yes.
Because it's the same guys who won, same guys that gotten, what, two coaches fired?
Yep.
And gotten off to another bad start. So maybe that's the issue.
Yep.
And if you have to move somebody, you know what? So what?
Yeah. Well, here's the problem, though. And this is where this falls on Doug Armstrong. All the guys you would consider moving have no trade clauses.
Mm-hmm.
So what, I mean, like you've put together a group where you cannot trade any of the players that would significantly impact the future of the team. And then you've got a bunch of guys on really bad contracts. You know, the Buchnevich deal, at the time the reaction was, whoa, that's a lot of term. You know, the AAV, okay, fine, but that's a lot of years. Why did we give a 35-year-old defenseman three more years on top of the year he has right now? And he's not playing well either. Cam Fowler was a lifesaver last year. He's not playing worth crap right now. So, as we talked about, we did this on the other night on Rush Hour Sports, Matt Pauly and I. It's funny how the vibes are different. Fans could not wait to run Mo out of town. This team's in the same spot the Cardinals have been in, maybe worse. They're locked in a cap sport with bad contracts. And I know that Army's leaving, or at least moving out of that role, but this is as much on the front office as the Cardinals stuff was on the front office. We don't get the same venom.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the baseball versus hockey fan. It's not that there aren't people who love hockey but it's just baseball's different.
And the diehard Blues people are on this stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're messaging me. I see it all the time.
Yeah, of course. Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ronji. Wheels, you'll be in on the Dave Glover show coming up here.
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy.
It's the Halloween show today.
Oh, the Halloween show.
Starting
that's
at 3:30.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
What did you come as today?
Me.
Himself.
Yeah.
Just yoked up.
Okay.
Thick neck, tight t-shirt.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
That's what he's got today. That's what Wheels has
for. That's my guy.
Thank you, Wheels.
See you, boys.
All right. Redbird Rush Hour 5.
Hey,
yeah. Redbird Rush Hour 5 with Matt Pauly today.
And Bernie.
And Bernie Miklas. So that'll be a big one. Listen at 5 o'clock. The Mizzou Tigers, they're off this week. They will play next week. Really tough one. They're hosting Texas A&M, the third-ranked team in the country. Connor O'Gara covers SEC football. We'll talk Mizzou with him and the SEC. That is next on KMOX.
Now, KMOX weather from the Saliga Heating and Cooling Weather Desk.
It's fantastic outside. Sunny and 58 degrees. It's going to be 62 today for your high.
If you're trying to sell a home, there's only one agent in town that I trust, Mark and Neil Gelman of eXp Realty. My friends Mark and Neil have the best system to connect you to the best qualified buyers, getting your home sold fast and for top dollar. 314-336-1991. Go to thegelmanteam.com.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It is Mike Claiborne and Chris Ronji, the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. It is time to go to the guest line this afternoon. And with the Missouri Tigers having an idle week this week, they're going to then play against Texas A&M on November 8th. But until then, we're going to talk about the Tigers and SEC football. Connor O'Gara is a senior national columnist for Saturdays Down South and a member of the Football Writers Association of America. Connor O'Gara with us on KMOX. How's it going, Connor?
Going pretty well. How about you guys?
Hey, we are doing okay. We want to talk about that Mizzou matchup, and we're going to do that in just a little bit here. But in terms of the way the SEC has gone down this season, and the way it's playing out so far, surprised by how it is and what the landscapes look like so far?
I think as a whole, no, not really. This is the new way of the sport. And as Steve Sarkisian talked about this in the offseason about how, you're just not going to see 16-0 teams. And if you do, build them a statue, because it's extremely hard to do that the way that rosters are constructed. And to see all these close games in the SEC where it feels like even the best of the best, a team like Texas A&M, who's the last remaining unbeaten, can go into Arkansas and have to kind of fight tooth and nail to be able to be able to win that one, which was a, you know, a fairly competitive game. This is the SEC. This is college football now, and it does feel more like the NFL in some ways. And at the same time, it's still a league that's got a ton of talent, and there's still a lot of talent at the top with these contending teams. So, yeah, I don't think that, you know, as a whole, it's very surprising. I think there are certain teams individually. Like, I didn't think A&M would be this good. I thought Vandy would be all right. I didn't think Vandy would be sitting here at 7-1, and I know Mizzou fans found that out all too well last weekend.
Hey, Connor, when you think about A&M, they survived the previous coach and the big thing. They had to end up spending so much money to buy him out. What turned the tide for them? Because I don't think A&M was mentioned as much as obviously as we heard about Texas at the beginning of the year. What turned things around for A&M, and what's made them so good so far?
They are, in my opinion, the most complete team in the SEC. They have the most ways to beat you. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to win a national championship, but I think they've been able to turn things around in part because the firing of Jimbo Fisher and the $76 million they gave him to go away, some looked at that as, well, if you're going to make a splashy firing, you have to then make a splashy hiring. And originally the plan was Mark Stoops, and wow, how things could have gone so differently had they been able to pull through with that. Oh, but instead, like, they hired Mike Elko, who is an adult in the room, and he is the adult that they needed at that time. And for those that have kind of followed his trajectory, it's not a surprise to see that he is a good leader of men. And he understands kind of what that program needed to do to be able to clean things up. They needed to get better as a road team. They couldn't just be the team that takes advantage of this great atmosphere that they have at Kyle Field. And they need to have that right offensive coordinator. They finally have that right play caller in Colin Klein, who should be one of these guys that's rumored for FBS head coaching jobs. And they've watched Marcel Reed take that next step. They hit on huge additions in the portal at receiver, and they return their top seven offensive linemen. So, like, all these things combined with the fact that Mike Elko is just a really good defensive-minded coach has led them to this point where it'd be a stunner if they missed the college football playoff.
Connor O'Gara covers SEC football for Saturday Down South with us on KMOX. The Tigers started the season 5-0 and, you know, a good win against South Carolina. They had an opportunity against Alabama. They also, and that's one of their losses, their second against Vandy, a team that you mentioned already. And they, well, you know, fell short to of tying that game by a couple of inches, you know, late as time was expiring. So as you look at the Tigers and where they are right now, are they disappointing to you, or does this feel about right for them?
This feels about right because the 7.5 win regular season over under that they had was wrong. And to me, it was a slap in the face because I think that odds makers and even those who, you know, rank in the AP poll that ignored Mizzou as a preseason top 25 team were ignoring, one, that they had a really favorable schedule, and two, they were ignoring this portal haul, which looked really promising. And I think it was fair to ask questions about Bo Prevula. What he was asked to do at Penn State was going to be different than what he was going to be asked to do at Mizzou. And while he was healthy, I thought he did a lot of things to check those boxes. But people overlooked the addition of Ahmad Hardy. They overlooked the fact that they went out and got Kevin Coleman Jr., who was the leading returning receiver in the SEC. And they already had some talent at the receiver position that was coming back. So I just think that people overlooked that, how much experience they returned on defense with the two key portal additions of Damon Wilson and Josiah Trotter. And this is a team that retain both coordinators at a time when college football, you know, it's really hard to do all those things. So I think that Mizzou is at the place I kind of expected them to be at this point. And they still have playoff life, which is about all you can ask for as we head into the first Saturday of November.
All right. What's the most attractive job that's going to be out there after this season? Because I have to feel that there are going to be some other coaches that will find themselves out on the street if they don't find themselves deep in the postseason.
you know, a lot of things can change. Like if Steve Sarkisian goes to the NFL, Texas would be the most attractive job. I don't think that ultimately ends up happening, despite the report from Diana Rossini that there was some initial interest in seeing what those waters could look like. But I'm going to go with Florida. And I would have told you LSU 5 days ago had I known that was going to open up. But seeing the way that this has played out over the course of the last week, I mean, it's a mess. It is an absolute mess. And you can't tell me that all of a sudden the job, you know, is just as good as it was at this time last week. It's simply not. And coaches in this market, they seek alignment. So I would go with Florida. Look, I was there a few weeks ago in the Swamp when they beat Texas, and you see a place that, even though it has a fan base that knows its coach is cooked, they can still get up in that atmosphere and give you such an unbelievable advantage against a top 10 team. And that to me means something. We can get in all the in-state recruiting stuff and all, you know, what does it mean here? What does it mean there? But, you know, there is an expectation and a culture there that is still so tough to beat. You're still going to get great resources. They finally have the updated facilities and all those things as well. So to me, I think that's what's going to end up being the most attractive vacancy.
You know, I'm glad you brought up LSU, because I was going to ask you about them anyway, because what happened this week with the governor of the state of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, having that press conference a couple of days ago and saying the AD is not going to get to pick the next football coach. They've fired him since. Brian Kelly, obviously, out. And I don't recall, and we know that in a lot of these states, the main football program is a state institution, which means that the coaches are state employees. So I guess it makes some sense the governor would talk about it so openly the way the one in Louisiana did. But have you ever seen anything like that? Because it seemed very much out of the ordinary for me.
Very out of the ordinary. And I know at Mizzou, they had dealt with a few years ago, there was debate about whether or not you were seeing an athletic director that was allowed to make an extension, to make a decision on that, and whether or not it was like the Board of Regents that was weighing in on Eli Drinkwitz's extension. And then ultimately you have a move where an athletic director, you know, leaves and Desiree Reed Francois, I was blanking on the name, and she ultimately ends up going to Arizona. It's like very, very different in terms of scale of what we're talking about here. And if you're an athletic director in the SEC, you know that pretty much the number one responsibility you have is hiring the right football coach. And if you're told you can't even do that anymore, it's stunning to see that play out in the way that it has at LSU. And just to assume like that it would play out this way, I couldn't have told you that. I couldn't have told you that we'd be having a governor step in and go, oh, well, the AD, he's not going to be able to make this. We're gonna fire him too. At a time when they don't have a president, and they're just turning to university officials going, well, they can't do this. They can't do this. Let's just have the government step in. I don't think that a prospective head coach wants to sit down with the Louisiana government to decide if they're going to be a fit there. I mean, like this stuff is just so like, it's so peak Louisiana and so peak SEC in so many ways that it does fit. But even for their very wild, rich history, this is a notch above anything I've ever seen.
It's pretty amazing, man. But we'll just leave it with this. So we'll ask you about this again. Tigers, Texas A&M next Saturday. So there's some time before that one. But what is Mizzou without Prabula? If he's and it looks like he's going to be out for a while, if not the entire season.
A run first team that ultimately needs Ahmad Hardy to do Ahmad Hardy things, which is break tackles, trust that zone running scheme, and trust that they're going to be able to make enough plays in the passing game with a true freshman quarterback who, let's remember, like a third string guy who, you know, coming into the season, I think everybody had high expectations of Sam Horn in the amount of time that we were going to be able to see him, that he would at least show some of that promise, even if Bo Prabula looked like he was going to be the starter. And then unfortunately, Sam Horn just continues to get bad luck. But I think Mizzou is going to have to win a lot of games 17-14. Like, I think that this defense is good enough to be able to do that. It's just a question of whether or not the ground game can be consistent enough. You can, and if you can play complementary football, and if you have a quarterback that can take care of the football, that's going to be really, really important with them being able to kind of weather the storm with a really difficult month that awaits. And I think you are looking at this team differently. You just have to. But this defense is good. It is still very, very good. And I'm not going to rule them out of any of these games when the margin for error has been so unbelievably small in so many SEC games.
Connor O'Gara, senior national columnist for Saturday Down South, also member of the Football Writers Association of America. We appreciate your coverage. Thank you, Connor.
Gentlemen, appreciate it.
It's Mizzou, Texas A&M, November 8th. They've got the bye week this week. I got Mike Claiborne with me, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Claibs, want to talk to you. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Cardinals coaching staff. We know more about it and what it will look like for 2026. That is next on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. World Series Game 6 tonight could be the end of the baseball season, or it will be tomorrow if it's not tonight. Toronto leads 3-2. We do know that the Cardinal season has been over since, the end of the regular season, and now we're just looking ahead to 2026. We knew Oliver Marmol was going to return as Cardinals manager. That was announced by Chaim Bloom, the new president of baseball operations, during his press conference weeks ago. Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji here with you on the Gas House Gang. And Claibs, we learned yesterday that the rest of the coaching staff is going to pretty much stay in place. They're going to add a couple of assistants. They are also going to shift some things around in terms of the assistant general manager, Randy Flores, and Moises Rodriguez, who are going to shift roles. Michael Gersh is going to become an advisor. But a lot of the same people are pretty much going to be here. They're going to add some positions throughout the organization. So, as you see it, what are your thoughts on the Cardinals coaching staff and what they're doing in the front office?
Well, I think the coaching staff was a pretty good staff considering what they had to work with. There are a couple of guys, Dean Kiekheffer and Packy, and I can never think of his last name. Anyway, he's going to move. They're going to move into the video range and probably do a little bit more game planning from that standpoint. But I think you're going to probably see another coach or two added. I don't think this is over with. You look around now, and the Giants started this a few years ago where they had almost as many people in uniform that weren't playing than they did that were playing. And, you know, everybody's looking for an edge. Everybody's looking for how they can solve the next pitch or the next hitter. And this is where we're going with it. So, you know, everyone knows enough about the information that's out there. Now they're just trying to find a way to take it to another level.
I was thinking,
and the Cardinals are short on that too.
Yeah.
Packy Elkins.
Yeah, I was thinking Packy, yeah. Naughton, which wasn't it. It's Patrick Elkins.
No, Packy so, Elkins.
Yeah. We talked about this while the season was going on a lot during the regular season, and then Chaim Bloom pretty much, I think, backed us up on this when he said he thought the coaching staff, in particular, that final series in Chicago, when the Cardinals were out of it, they knew they were out of it for the season. They knew they weren't going to the playoffs, but he loved the work they were doing while they were there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we knew that most of them, if not all of them, were going to come back. I think the coaching staff did perfectly fine and maybe even a really good job last year. That this whole thing wasn't about them as much as it was about the roster.
I couldn't agree with you more. I remember, I think it was that Saturday game. We were getting our brains beat out by the Cubs, and I was standing in the camera well right next to the dugout, and it jumped out at me watching coaches still talking to players and coaching players and showing them this situation and that situation. And let's face it, a lot of guys would have been thinking about what their tee time was going to be next week and how quickly they could get home with their family. These guys did not quit. These guys did not give up on the players. And I thought that was a real statement because I've seen the other side of that coin where coaches will check out, as do players, but I didn't see it this year, and I'm only looking forward to seeing them next year with a new environment, some more help, and perhaps some better players.
Also, the reporting from yesterday was that Yadier Molina at this point is not going to be a member of the coaching staff, even though it was reported earlier that he might be. That there were some potentially some conversations happening there. Ultimately, if he does end up in the dugout for the Cardinals, whether it's managerial role or an assistant coaching role, how good of a coach do you think he will end up being?
I have no idea. I know he's a very good catcher. I know he's managed on the Puerto Rican team and some national teams of that nature. This is a whole new animal. I've tried to tell people that. This is a situation where you have a lot more responsibility than managing a team for 6 weeks. You're managing other coaches. You're managing the organization for the most part when it comes to players on the field. This is not you're there at sunrise to sunset. There's a lot of things that go on, and you're doing all this in 180 games when you're playing 162 games. So there's a lot of things that go into it. So I really don't know what kind of coach he could be, because he knows the game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But how can you convey that to other players and get them to buy in? You know, what kind of teammate was he to some? You know, how is he able to spread himself out and make sure he's available and transparent to everyone? And that goes for every coach. I'm not just singling out Yachty. I mean, every manager who comes right off the field, I think that's one of the first things they have to try and figure out, how they can separate themselves from being a player to now being an administrator, teacher, and just everything else that comes with the job.
I appreciate that take so much, because we were talking about this at the end of the season. And when it comes to him, or it comes to Albert Pujols, these guys are clearly brilliant baseball people. That does not mean for sure they will be good managers. Ted Williams, his teams didn't do all that great.
There you go. I was going to bring him up. For those who remember who Ted Williams is, or what it was. But, you know, you think about it, Chris. How many guys who walk right off the field who had Hall of Fame credentials that found themselves as successful as a manager once they got to the big leagues,
right
from the field to the dugout?
It's a lot tougher than you think. Mike Claiborne will do it again next Friday. Thanks, man.
Can't wait. All right, talk to you then.
Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji, Gashouse Gang. Go get the podcast. If you missed anything, just search it out on the Odyssey app, iHeart app, or wherever you get your podcast. Back with you at 12 o'clock on Monday. But next, it's the Dave Glover Show. The Halloween special is next.